You are listening to the Power of Why podcast.
This episode is brought to you in collaboration with Invest Ottawa, the lead economic development agency for knowledge-based industries in Canada's capital, and with critical support from BDC Capital's Thrive Venture Fund, and also the title sponsor of International Women's Week. We teamed up to produce this special series to celebrate women leading in Ottawa. In support of its women founders and owner strategy, Invest Ottawa offers programs and services that enable and accelerate the growth and success of women entrepreneurs from every walk of life. Visit www.investottawa.ca/women to learn more. Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of The Power of Why. My name is Naomi Hailey, and today I am here with Dusha Agampodi. Dusha, how are you doing today?
Good. I'm doing well, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing really well. Thank you for asking. I appreciate that. I'm super excited to record this episode with you. I think you have a beautiful story, and you have so many experiences that I think a lot of us can learn from, and the stories and your values, the leadership that you're really undertaking in so many areas of your life is really inspiring to me. And so for the audience, before we start, let me tell you a little bit about Dusha. So Dusha Agampodi has 2 decades of technical and leadership experience at small, medium, and large companies, leading teams to deliver new products to market. She has extensive experience building engineering teams and establishing efficient processes for scaling organizations. She's a mentor and an advocate for diverse representation in the technology industry, which we'll talk about today. Dusha, in her role, is a director of engineering at Aurora Solar. She has spent years building and leading engineering teams at BlackBerry and Magnetic Forensics. She's also passionate about building communities and creating equitable environments where everyone feels heard, seen, and recognized. And outside of her work, you'll find her in her vegetable garden, making sourdough, catching frogs with her 2 kids, or on a kayak. And so, Dusha, thank you so much for being here. I'd love for you to start by sharing a little bit about your origin story. Like, how would you describe your childhood? And we can go from there.
First of all, thanks so much for having me here. I'm really excited to talk to you today. I grew up in Sri Lanka, where I spent about 14 years of my life in Sri Lanka, growing up in a Buddhist household. My parents were heavily involved in our community. So, you know, they, as kids, we complained. They dragged us around everywhere to all the events or all the volunteering that they did. But in hindsight, I could see how they were really just demonstrating by example how much they were giving back to the community. So I can see all of the compassion and the kindness that was all around me. And I'm so grateful to my parents for, you know, sharing those values with me. As a kid, I climbed trees, played a lot of cricket. I read an incredible amount of books. My dad used to take me to book fairs, and just the smell of the books and, you know, going and looking at bookcases full of new books was, you know, probably where I found the most amount of joy. So that's a little bit about my childhood. And then around 11, my parents passed away. And, you know, that was a lot of lessons were learned during that time and a lot of grief. As a kid, though, I think the grief came much later in my life when you look back and see all of the events in your life that your parents are not there for. Mm-hmm. You know, at the time, I learned a lot just going through their funeral, you know, seeing the community that they had supported come back to celebrate their life. It was really, really meaningful to me. And, you know, it was a signal that for me to remember that that's how I would like to live my life. You know, I think the biggest lessons there is knowing how short life is, and that I carry throughout my life with me. And, you know, looking in hindsight, I can see how I was as a kid. It kind of reflects some of the work that I do now. For an example, I was always the one with ideas in our neighborhood. I always had these crazy ideas, and then I got the kids in the neighborhood around my idea to actually help me execute it. For an example, there was once when we created the library, every Saturday we would meet, you know, and then there was once when I had this idea of setting up like a big campsite. We built this huge campsite and all the kids came together with all the material we needed. Another one was like putting Olympics together. So these are all my crazy ideas, and I got the community of the kids together to execute on it. So I can see some of that looking back is a lot more clear, less of a surprise that I'm where I am now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm really sorry for a loss that's so close to you to happen so early in your life. During that time, you actually have, for folks who are following you, some Medium blog posts that where you actually like write how you like kind of processed, you know, the funeral, for example, and the tradition around it and how everyone really came together to celebrate their lives. And I'd love for you to explain, if you would like, this concept around celebrating life after their time here on Earth, because I don't think that's a tradition that's really practiced in so many other cultures. And I'm wondering if that specifically helped you through the grieving process as well.
It really did. I think I didn't realize how much support that provided me, having all of those people come together and, you know, talk to me about the difference that my parents made in their lives and how much they appreciate it. And they talk to me still when I go on visits and they hear about whose daughter I am, they come and tell me, you know, so it's like, it lives on so much longer, you know, than they were here for. It's really meaningful. So now I would say, you know, so much of what I do is with that in mind, especially now, like especially true now that I'm a parent, I'm thinking of, how could I leave this for my children, you know, so that, gonna try not to get emotional here, like so that, you know, my kids, someone will tell them, you know, my kids, that, hey, I made a difference, you know, so that, and hopefully remind them like years later, you know, it's, I feel like it's a gift we leave to everybody else we leave behind, a good memory. And, I'm super grateful that my parents did that for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in my mind, that really describes legacy. This idea of what is it that you like leave behind? And sometimes, like, I think it's more fascinating to talk about the non-physical things that you leave behind, right? And so like, you know, helping people, really being like community service oriented and just leaving an impact on the people who are around you as well. And I like how that you're really taking that and embodying it in your current, like with your current family. You had a lot of really great ideas coming up, and it seems like you had the space to explore that. What do you think helped really nurture your boldness almost, and your just willingness to color outside of the lines and bring people along the ride as well?
Yeah, I wonder, because, you know, in Sri Lanka, there is definitely an expectation, especially for girls, to follow the path. And I wasn't. So I guess I should, you know, give credit to my parents for creating that space, because I don't remember them trying to hold me back. I didn't, you know, like even a small thing as playing cricket, not many girls did that, you know, but I don't remember my parents ever encouraging me to say no. You know, I think I was a bit of a tomboy, and, you know, I, even the climbing trees and all of that. And my dad worked at a university that was, had a good engineering program. He used to bring me with him. And in hindsight, I wonder if this was on purpose, because sometimes in the weekend, he'd be like, oh, I need to go into the lab to grab something, you know, so he'd bring me with him. And I remember being really fascinated by all of the lab equipment and all of the books, you know, and seeing the students walking around and really just getting fascinated by all of that. And I wonder if he did that on purpose. But
sounds, you know, like
it sounds like it, given how things turned out.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't tell me that back then. So I think, you know, they really gave me a lot of space and also gave me a lot of opportunities to kind of explore my interests. Plus, I think it helps. We didn't have internet or TV for most of my childhood. So there, I didn't have much else to do with my time. So I think that helped my imagination as well.
That's so beautiful. And it sounds like you were just, you know, spend time in nature, like we're really in touch with your environment and the people in your environment. So I really love how that really connects to the work that you do today, which is a really leans on your curiosity. It leans on experimentation. And so I'm wondering if you can share with folks what your day-to-day looks like today and what it means to be in your role.
Yes, especially at Aurora Solar. I've been here a year and coming up to a year and a half, and it's been such a dream role for me because it's climate tech. You know, when you think of going into software, you don't always think of the impact that you can make with it, especially early on. You know, if you're going to university and you want to get a software engineering degree, you might not always think of what kind of impact can you make on society with this, but it's everywhere now. You know, like software is in everything we use. I like the fact that I feel lucky to use my abilities to do something that's making a positive impact in the world. You know, so when it comes to sustainability, when it comes to solar energy, it's very much aligned with my values as well. So the fact that I get to work here doing that is great. And then, you know, here as a director of engineering, I get to support multiple teams of engineers who are really talented and passionate and kind. And I get to help them build really good relationships with each other. And I get to create environments that where they can share their really good ideas. To create an environment where they can share their really good ideas, you have to create an environment where people can share their bad ideas. You know, and that's easy to say, but really hard to do.
Yeah.
And I love it.
I'm curious, being in a technical role at you mentioned sustainable energy, climate technology company. What have you, I guess in the early days as an engineer, like what wins, experiences, or moments really made you feel like you were on the right path early on? Because I want to get into the leadership stuff as well, but on a technical level, when it came to stepping into this industry and diving into it, like how did you know that this was a great space for you, that you could learn here?
I didn't think much about the path I wanted to take. There's some people who come out of university knowing where they want to go with their career. I was not one of those people. I really
I will say, out of all the episodes I've ever recorded, no one has ever told me that.
Oh, good. Perfect. Everyone just looks like they have it figured out. You know, it's good to know that we're all in this together. I had no idea, except I knew I wanted to be in software, you know, really just writing software. I love the field. I love how quickly you can make changes with a few lines of code. And if it's broken, you know, you debug it. And then it's really rewarding when you figure out what's broken. So all of that I knew, and that's as far as I knew when it came to my path. So I didn't plan on going into leadership. And I enjoyed the experiences I got at the small startups and then at BlackBerry, where I was there for 12 years, which is a long amount of time. I had a great manager who recognized some of the leadership abilities that I had, who recommended me for a promotion. And in hindsight, I wish I had been the one to ask, but I think at that point in my career, I didn't have as much confidence in my abilities. And I was the only woman on the team. You know, there was a lot of imposter syndrome. Looking back, it's so much more clear. All of that, I think I had a lot of doubt that kept me from asking or even considering myself, you know, kind of self-selecting out, I would say. And that's, some of it's in my head, some of it's obviously the environment that, with lack of representation. So all of that. So I was grateful to have a manager who recommended me for a promotion. And after that, I didn't really look back. I loved it. I loved being a team lead. And then, you know, I loved being an engineering manager. I liked the impact I got to make. So for me, throughout my career, titles didn't really matter, and they still don't. What's really important to me is that I get to work somewhere where I can grow my impact, where I'm making a good impact and I am able to continue to grow it. You know, that's the most important thing, and for me to feel heard. So often if I leave somewhere, it's because one of those two things is missing, or I've just hit a cap, you know, and that has happened to me a few times in my career where I feel like I'm just not feeling heard here anymore, or I think I've made the impact I'm going to make here, and there is no more room for me to grow that. And so that's kind of how I've followed my career path, I would say. And here at Aurora Solar, I feel like I'm doing some of my best work, and there's so much more I get to do, and they've created this environment where I have room to do that. And so I love it.
That's awesome. You made a comment about being identified for a leadership opportunity and like this manager really seeing those things in you. You made a comment that you'd wish that you raised your hand on your own.
Mm-hmm.
How do you see that decision?
Yes, I think it's because I get asked this question a lot, especially because, you know, as I'm mentoring young women in their career who are interested in moving into leadership positions, they ask me how my path went, you know, and I want them to be able to recognize their capabilities and speak and ask for what they would like, you know. So I think that's where I didn't, and I wish I had thought about what I wanted and, you know, found ways to ask for it. It hasn't been easy for me. Like, negotiation has been difficult for me. Asking for what I want, asking for a promotion or a raise, all of that has been difficult for me. And I've read the data that speaks about how generally it's harder for women to do that. You know, we can't all be guaranteed to have a leader who will advocate for us. Ideally, we all do, but we're not all going to. So I think with that in mind, I like to encourage anyone I'm mentoring to find ways to recognize where they want to go. And then, you know, let's talk through some ways of how you can ask for it. I just wish I had my own example to share so that I'm not a hypocrite.
Got it. Okay, that's clear. It's clear because sometimes what you're speaking to is that self-awareness piece, right? And being able to identify yourself in yourself. Where am I really strong? Where do I want to grow, like an up level? And in what areas do I need to improve? And honestly, like underpinning all of that is like, what do you enjoy? And what are you like naturally good at? And sometimes I've noticed even in like parts of my professional life, let's say, it's been really helpful receiving that feedback because, you know, sometimes you have blind spots and maybe things that other people recognize as strengths in you, you thought, well, I thought everyone, you know, was really good at this. Honestly, I'm glad that you had that in your life and that the way that you're mentoring is also like helping people strengthen that self-awareness skill as well. You mentioned a few points about speaking up more and you shared your experiences around like negotiating and just, I think, being more vocal in your career. In our last conversation, you also talked about this and also really want to encourage other people to not think about like their age or like what stage they are in their career, but to just raise their hand, speak at events, that sort of thing. So can you talk a little bit about this and what you would like to impart on people?
Sure. Yes, I can talk about a key moment when I realized that I should share my experiences a little bit more, because I knew I wanted to. I always knew that I would like to give back to the tech community, you know, really figure out ways to encourage more women to get into tech, you know, more diversity in tech. I waited, though, for a very long time until I felt like I had something valuable to share. Or, you know, I kept telling myself, oh, I'm not ready yet, but one day I will do this. And then there was this event I went to. It wasn't a Women in Tech event. I think it was a hacker event of some kind, but they had a panel of women leaders on stage at one of the events during those 2 days. And I was sitting in the audience and I was looking at the three women on stage and they were sharing, you know, great experiences and all. But for me, it occurred to me that just their presence on stage was enough, because it was so rare. I hadn't seen that too many times in my career. And just seeing them on stage was inspiring. It didn't even matter what they had to say. So, and that was really a key moment for me. I was like, wow, I've got to do this, you know, because by that point, I was already in engineering leadership. And I was like, I have got to get out there and talk about my experiences, what I've learned, in the hopes that it might encourage others or inspire others. And or at the very least, what I found is hearing from other women who are ahead of me in their career journey, talk about some of what they've experienced, whether it's, you know, some unconscious bias they might have experienced or microaggressions. I found it incredibly validating for me to hear it. So now I think I should do the same for others. If nothing else, it will provide validation, and maybe that will give you some courage to, you know, share your opinion, give your input, and just continue.
Yeah, that's really powerful. And I'm sure, you know, along your own path, especially as you started delving into, like, the way that I see just learning about the different types of ownership that you take on in your role, but also in terms of culture building and in terms of diversity, equity, and inclusion, which is really, really important. I'm wondering when, as a leader, like, you knew that being a change agent was a part of what you were called to do. And what does that mean in the different areas of your work? So as an engineer, per se, as an inclusion champion?
I think, you know, I've lived it. So I knew what it felt like to be underrepresented on a team. And I knew how hard it was for me to get my opinion out when I'm underrepresented on a team. So when I went into engineering leadership, I knew the kind of environment I needed to create so that we're hearing from everyone who's on the team. Because I knew how hard it is for me. So having personally experienced it, I think really, really helps. I approach everything with a DEI lens. I think inclusion, if we don't have inclusion, you're not hearing from everyone you've hired and you're just wasting your money, you know? So even from a company profit perspective, I'm mindful of the cost to the company if you're hiring a diverse set of individuals and you're not hearing from them. So that's one. And then I've read the data. I've seen it personally, but I've also read all of the studies to understand, you know, how much your profits are affected by having a diverse group of folks on the team, and then getting all of their ideas, you know, and especially in tech, and I assume everywhere, ideally you want to build the best idea, the best products, and you want to innovate. You know, and that requires, like, that isn't needed group of people who are sitting in a room sharing the same idea, agreeing with each other. It requires an environment where there's debate, there's disagreement. Finding a way to do that in a healthy way is really hard. It takes a lot of work every day. Anytime I'm in a meeting, I'm looking in the room to see, in the virtual room, to see, like, who are we hearing from in this call? Who are we not hearing from? Who's underrepresented in this call? how do I get their opinion out? You know, so I'm watching for that every day in all of the calls I'm in, because it's really important to me. So that's a little bit about my day to day.
That's a really tangible and powerful example. And I think also like creating other, because sometimes, as you mentioned, like speaking up in those types of environment is not easy for folks to do. And so having like other modalities for people to share their ideas with the group is also really powerful. I love that example. And as a leader, I think being aware of, you know, the strengths of the team, and also the opportunities that you see for individual like development is really powerful too. There's this book called Good to Great, Why Some Companies Make the Leap and Others Don't, which I'm sure you've heard about, by Jim Collins. But he talks about getting like the right people on the bus and building a team that's really in line with the mission and how important that is to an organizational's impact and their effectiveness. I'm wondering, because you have experience doing this, like, can you share some insights that you've gleaned on what it takes to build a successful team?
Sure. Yes. That's a great book, by the way. And I've read the data that Google put out. This was a while ago. They talked about what makes a great team. They had done an incredible amount of research. And, you know, they talked about the psychological safety that needs to exist so that, like I mentioned previously, so that people can share the ideas that they're less sure of, you know, because I think that is the case most of the time. Most of us have great ideas, but we're not 100% sure of them, or they're good ideas, but they could be great, but we don't know. We need to validate it with the rest of the team. But if we don't have an environment where we can share it, then we don't. So finding an environment where the psychological safety exists so that if you do one day share an idea and it's actually a bad idea, you know, I like to train my teams about like, how do we respond to each other when we make mistakes? As a leader, this is something I say to the people that I work with. It's really important to me how I treat you when you make a mistake. Making mistakes has to be okay. What's not okay is that we don't learn from them. You know, show me that we continue to learn, but let's have this environment where we make mistakes. You know, we set the right monitoring in place so that ideally we're not releasing any large mistakes to the customer and the product, because you don't want that to happen too many times, but really finding ways to have the right, you know, processes in place where we have safety to take risks, to try out our new ideas, to experiment, and then learn from our mistakes. So that's, you know, that's really important to me. And then, you know, at Aurora, we have onboarding sessions that we're putting together where we talk about, when you're doing code reviews as a software engineer, how do you approach that with empathy? You know, because that's something we do every day. If you're a software engineer, code reviews are something you do many times a day, every day. And it's by design, it's designed for different ideas. Like, you're not putting your code up for everyone to say, this is great. You're putting it for review so that other people can find your blind spot. So by design, it's supposed to have perspectives that are different from yours. So how do we approach that with empathy? You know, and as a software engineer, how do you write code knowing that you might not be the one to maintain it? So like, write it in a way that someone else can come in here and debug it when there's problems later. You know, so it's so much of what we do is teamwork. And making sure they all like each other and respect each other and we're having fun together is really important to me. Plus, I think building those relationships and caring about each other, even outside of work, makes it so much easier when you do have to have those hard conversations. So a lot of the investment that I make is building the relationships so that if there's something they have to bring up that's frustrating them or that's not working, they can bring it up to me, because that's when it takes courage.
Yeah, I was taking notes, and I hope everyone who's listening is also taking notes, because these are some like very tangible things that you can implement. For me, it just speaks to sustaining the longevity of the work that you're doing, and also the trust that's there, the trust, the care, the empathy, as you stated, for your team members, and also like the process of the day-to-day. I think one of the tough things that we often see with clients is just the lack of documentation. What was the thought process here? How can someone who is like newly joining our team really learn and like get on board to how we tend to do things here? And so I think that's really great. I'd love to switch gears a little bit and ask you a little bit about the value of mentoring. You visit different high schools and universities. You mentor women in tech. And what I also love to learn about you is that you also sponsor a scholarship at your former high school. And so I think that's really beautiful. And I think that's such a practical way to continue to foster a connection with institutions that have been so formative in your own development. And so can you share a little bit about how and why you find meaning in helping young women really enter the technology space?
I love the fact that I got the opportunity to sponsor the scholarship at my high school, you know, because when I moved to Canada at 14, I went to the school and took English as a second language because I didn't speak much English when I first moved here. So it's how much I got out of that school, it's really meaningful to me. So I had been looking for ways to give back. And I know how hard it is, having gone through it myself, when you're new to a country and you're new to the language, you know, and finding the sense of belonging takes a long time. There's so much of yourself that I think others don't get to see when there's the language barrier. And, you know, I went through that in my first few years in Canada. I met great friends who were also going through the ESL programs and great, great teachers. And by the time I graduated, you know, I was in my last year, I was the editor of our high school newspaper, which I'm super proud of because, you know, I had gone through ESL a few years before. And
that's amazing.
You know, I think that speaks to the quality of the teachers that I had and the friendships that I built. So giving back to the school is really meaningful. So the award that I sponsor is the graduating student with the highest academic standing from the ESL classes. So it's really meaningful. And I do also get to visit once a year, though we haven't done it in the pandemic as much, is I get to go speak to the ESL students at my high school and talk about my journey and my career journey, because I know how hard it was. And one of the questions they always ask me is like, how long did it take you to learn English? Do you have some tips on how we can do this more quickly? Because really, when you're new here, that's one of the biggest barriers. And that's a question I always get. And so it's really meaningful for me to do these visits to my high school. And with Carleton University, I've been doing some visits to talk to other high schools about engineering in particular and why everyone should consider going into engineering, because I think young girls self-select out. They don't even consider going into engineering. That starts really early. So I like to talk through my experiences, because I read that seeing examples really make a difference in changing their minds.
Yeah. And it goes to the impact that you had experienced also seeing other people, and mentioning that just even seeing them there was enough. And what you mentioned previously, just about like, if anything, like even if it offers validation, like that is a powerful starting point. I'm wondering, because my audience is mainly like 18 to 35, you know, career switching is also a thing. And yeah. I think there's you being in a technical space in an industry that is about sustaining our future. What would you say, like from your lens and your seat, what excites you most about the area that you're in? And for folks who maybe even at a later stage, however, I'm going to keep that definition open, however you define that, like what would you say to folks about the opportunities that are in your space?
Yes, I would love to encourage everyone, you know, when you think of engineering traditionally, I think you might think, you know, it's very male-dominated industry. You don't always get to see as many examples of the impact that you get to make. And I know for women in particular, you know, there's data that suggests that women prefer to pick fields that where they can see the societal impact. So that they can make with their career choice. And I've been talking to the universities in Ottawa, telling them it's like, you need to figure out how to market engineering differently, because there's so much impact that we all make in this field, whether it's, you know, civil or mechanical or software. Some of it's a marketing issue. We just need to highlight the impact that you make in society. And for an example, you know, having gone through in software, there's so much you can do, whether it's climate tech or at Magnet Forensics, you know, it was digital forensics software. And this was used by investigators to, you know, uncover evidence for like domestic violence cases or child abuse cases. And these are really meaningful work. So those are just some of the examples from my own career, but I would love to encourage everyone to just, you know, do some research about the type of impact that you get to make in the engineering fields. And also career switching is definitely an option. I think especially software, there's so many boot camps now, there's so many courses you can take. And, you know, even if it's not like, if you're not looking to write code, there's so many different roles available in the industry, you know, and so many of the skills are transferable that I think you don't always think about that, but there's so many different types of roles and a lot of the skills are transferable. I think doing some research and then working with the universities and colleges on how they market these degrees would go a long way.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I'm learning more and more how important positioning is. There is this article that you wrote, which we'll definitely share in the show notes, but you basically mentioned that, and this is a quote, when you have the answer to what's the worst that can happen, so many amazing things are still possible after that. And I think it aligns to what you just said about being open to other opportunities that you may not have immediately thought about. And sometimes those decisions can, like, you're met with all of the obstacles or like, okay, what can go wrong, yada, yada. But I feel like what you said here is such an amazing exercise to go through. And it, as I was reading it, it reminded me of this concept that Tim Ferriss came up with called fear setting, where you actually like write down what the worst thing can happen from just going after what you want in your dreams. And laying it out and almost coming up with like a plan for how you can tackle this if they were to ever happen. And what he came up with was, when you actually lay things out like that, you realize that the worst thing that you think could happen, even if it does, it's really not that bad. But what you could lose from not doing it is so much greater. And so I'm wondering if you can share an example of this, if you've applied it in your own life, and some of the small steps that you took to just get outside of your comfort zone. And I think any example would be great.
Yes, I have a big example. But before that, I will definitely add, some of the best people that I've hired have actually been ones who took a career change, who made a career change, because it requires courage to really go after something that you are curious and interested about. So I find they're more invested and more engaged. And honestly, some of the best people that I have hired are the ones who made that switch, because I know the courage it takes, for sure.
That's really interesting. That's very interesting. Thank you for sharing.
For me, I think, you know, early on in my life, I think I had this fear of failure for a long time and I didn't take risks as much. But there was one example where I really wanted to do a TEDx and I had set a 5-year goal. I'm like, okay, you know, 5 years, I'm, you know, within this 5 years, I'm going to do one. And then like 2 years in, I got the opportunity to audition. I got selected to audition, which in itself is pretty exciting. And I was not ready. It was too soon in hindsight. And I knew it, even going into it, I knew it was too soon, but it was something I really, really wanted. And then I did it and it was terrible. The audition, I was super nervous. Public speaking is not really my thing. I was nervous. It didn't go well. And then when I got the email to say that I didn't make it, it was devastating. It took me weeks to even tell my closest friends and family that the news that I didn't make it because I had to process it myself to be able to say it out loud. But what I found afterwards is that year I accomplished so much more than I had ever accomplished in terms of what else I did, you know, in the community, what other events, like I hosted a bunch of other events. There was just so much I did that year because I had tried this one thing I really wanted, and then I failed at it. And then I realized that, hey, life goes on. Everything's still okay. So it made me take all these other risks that I otherwise wouldn't have taken. So it was a great experience. Everyone should have that experience at least once in their life, and hopefully earlier than I did in my life. Because then I'm definitely more comfortable taking risks now, because I think I've kind of seen life goes on. It's okay.
It was almost like a snowball effect of going after something you really wanted and then getting into that momentum of like raising your hand for things and trying things out and seeing where it takes you. That's really beautiful. Yes. What year was that? Was that 2021?
No, it was before the pandemic. So maybe okay. 2018, 2019.
Yep. That's beautiful, Thisha. Thank you so much for sharing that. So as we wrap up the episode, I have one more question that is, you kind of shared already, and this is a question that I typically ask, like, what are you excited about in your industry, like in terms of things that are happening, things that you have your eyes on, things that you're monitoring? So is anything, you know, really piquing your interest right now?
Couple of things. For solar in particular, I'm excited about storage. There's a lot of advancements being made, and there's more we'll get to see in the next few years in terms of solar storage. I'm excited about it personally for me, because I want to get solar on my house and I don't want to be on the grid. So if you want to be off grid, you need storage. And if you make great advancements, then you can have whole cities off grid, which is great. It's great, especially because I've been watching zombie shows, thinking about what happens when there's no electricity, but the sun is still around. I'm monitoring everything around AI right now, because it's everywhere in the news. And I'm also aware of the biases that exist in AI. So it's just something there's disruptions happening right now in the industry, you know, and everyone's talking about the battle between Microsoft and Google with ChatGPT. Mm-hmm. And I'm just, as someone in the industry, it's interesting to watch. And also, you know, slight nervousness around the biases that exist in AI. So I'm watching it very closely.
I think this is a theme in all the Invest Ottawa series participants, like the featured leaders. Everyone has mentioned AI as something that they're keeping their eye on. And so I think that's a great signal to folks listening. You have these brilliant people who are across industries really highlighting some important developments. And so thank you for flagging that. It was an absolute pleasure to learn more about your story, your career story as well, and just how you've been able to like create a circle of impact around you, and that has so many other ripples. So thank you for being here. I really appreciate it.
It's been great, Naomi, and thank you for creating this safe space here for me to share my stories. It's been great meeting you, and I've really enjoyed our conversations over the last few weeks, and I'm looking forward to when we get to chat again.
I'm looking forward to it as well. Thank you so much, Thisha. Thank you to everyone who had a chance to listen to this phenomenal episode. We will catch you in the next one. Thank you for listening to the Power of Why podcast. You can find the show notes at naomihiley.com/podcast. And if you haven't already, make sure to subscribe to the Power of Why on iTunes, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts. This episode was brought to you in collaboration with Invest Ottawa and with critical support from BDC Capital's Thrive Venture Fund, title sponsor of International Women's Week 2023. We teamed up to produce this special series in celebration of International Women's Week, featuring 6 inspirational leaders. Visit www.investottawa.ca/IWW to learn more.